Season 5, When Bad Animals Go Bad. With your hosts, the Reverend Dr. Death and Lyraina. This season will include love.
Do you know how your husband died?
Oh, yes. I killed him.
Transformations. And certified good boys and girls.
Cujo, what are you growling at?
Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is always advised.
Perfect, go bad, dang!
Everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, Lyraina. Well, the full moon is out, Lyraina. Is that the howling I hear of a werewolf or one of your demon dogs in the studio?
A full moon? I thought it was my ass.
Why that old Jamaican is mooning us, I'll have no idea. January is the wolf moon, appropriate given our dive into werewolf films this season. So we decided to go with the most well-known werewolf films of all time to start out this monthly tradition. Werewolf of London was technically Universal Studios' first foray into werewolf films, premiering in 1935. But despite having excellent practical effects and werewolf design, it didn't quite catch on with audiences, was forgotten. Universal shelved that idea for a few years, focusing on their other horror icons, and eventually released the lycanthropic film that set the standard for all werewolf movies to come. This one movie inspired an entire generation of up-and-coming makeup effects artists and directors, including John Landis and Rick Baker, who would go on to add their own stamp on the iconic monster. So grab the Wolfsbane, make sure you have some silver handy, and join us as we review The Wolfman from 1941, and American Werewolf in London from 1981, which was a pretty good year to be born, by the way.
Yeah. Shut up.
Podcast.
So stupid.
If you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you'd take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod. We can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. The Wolfman from 1941. Tagline: night monster, prowling, killing, terrifying a countryside with the bloodlust of a savage beast.
It's a little TLDR. Too long.
They all are from back in the day. Believe me, they basically told the story of the movie in the tagline.
Okay.
You wait till you get to the other ones.
Oh,
they're worse.
Jesus.
Believe me. Directed by George Wagner, written by Kurt Sidomack, music by Charles Previn, Hans J. Salter, and Frank Skinner, who were all uncredited, by the way, which is funny because the music from this movie is everybody talks about the music from this movie, like the original Wolfman, as being like one of the best of the Universal monster films, but yet the people who made the music were uncredited. Imagine that.
He is Universal. This is a Universal film.
It is.
Okay. Did you say American Werewolf in London was as well?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I did not know that. Okay. That's why I had to clarify. Okay.
Yeah. There's a reason they keep mentioning the Wolfman in American Werewolf
yes,
in London.
I know. Okay, I'm so glad you said that, and I know we'll discuss it in there. But, like, I did see at least one clip, or at least I remember at least one clip, and I was like, holy shit, they're talking about the Wolfman.
Yeah, that's because Universal – so, all right, just to backtrack a little bit. Budget, first of all, before I say this, $180,000 USD – this is weird thing. Like when I looked up the box office, all it ever said anywhere was 420. Like okay. It didn't say dollars. It didn't say thousand. Didn't say, I'm assuming not million. It was too far back in the day for it to be million. So I'm going to assume it made 420,000 because $420 makes no fucking sense. Yeah,
there's no way. Oh, it was 1941. I mean, what was it, like 10 cents to go see a movie?
Maybe, but still, I mean, they would have had to make more than that to make up for $180,000.
That's true. God, that's a lot of money for, is that a lot of money for 1941?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they were still on the gold standard, so I mean, money was worth way more back in those days. Anyways, what I was going to say while you looked that up is that they keep pointing this out in the special features on all these discs about the Wolfman and American Werewolf in London, because funny enough, American Werewolf in London special features talk as much, if not more, about the Wolfman as they do about the actual film they're talking about. They mention how every other Universal monster, well, except for maybe the Gill Man, had its lore established in a novel. You know, obviously Dracula, vampires were established in Bram Stoker's novel.
Yes.
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, lore yeah. established in that. The Wolfman, there was German books at the time, and they keep mentioning one in particular that came out.
Yeah.
Even going back to Little Red Riding Hood, because let's be honest, it was a werewolf in that story. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But they never had any established lore in any of them. They just mentioned, you know, a beast changing at night, you know, and you know, all that stuff. It is the Wolfman movie, this one right here. In particular, Kurt, the writer of this, who established all the lore that came afterward, the silver bullets, the wolf's bane, all that stuff. It all came about because this movie established the lore. This one movie, like it, that's why everybody goes back to it and gives it so much credit, because if this movie hadn't came out, we wouldn't have had any of the other ones that came out afterward, basically, or not to the way that we had them. I'll say that they would have been probably, people would have probably caught on to the werewolf theme and used it, but they wouldn't have had like the basics that they would have stayed with as far as how to kill them and when they changed and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's some lore about werewolves. And I think one of the movies we're reviewing this season is like this. I could be wrong. That they basically had to don the pelts of the wolves to transform into them. They didn't actually transform from within. It's when they put on like wolf pelts that they transformed into the monsters. So it's not universal, but that, you know, that they transform in their body, as it were. So just heads up on that. The Wolfman is the movie that gave us all the stuff that we know about werewolves.
Okay. Real quick, two things. It cost, the average movie ticket in the 1940s was about 25 cents, which equates to about almost 1.7 million moviegoers that had to see this for it to get that amount of money.
Okay.
I did the calculations. Also, when it comes to Germany and werewolves, do you recall on the newer, I believe, it's not Tales from the Crypt, or maybe, no. It is, fuck, what was it? Is it Tales from the Crypt that, or, no, it's the comic book scary guy.
Creep show,
the newest Creep Show. Did you see the werewolf one with the German soldiers?
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, the Nazis.
That was hella good. That's what it made me think about, that, because I'm like, that's weird. I have not heard anything about werewolves in Germany, and here we are.
Well, funny you say that, because Kurt was a Jewish man who, and this was right around the time of the Holocaust, so there is a lot of Jewish symbolism that was built into this movie.
Wow.
To counteract the German stuff that was going on.
Oh, my God.
Principal players, we have Lon Chaney Jr., a.k.a. Creighton Chaney. Funny story about this, Lon Chaney Jr. was not his name. In fact, Creighton Chaney, who was the son of Lon Chaney, despised his father. His father wasn't there. He was all about, you know, being the big up and coming, you know, like makeup effects guy, you know, or the guy who was in the movie, the monster and all that in the previous generation of silent films. And when they made him take on the name of Lon Chaney Jr., which was the requirement for him to be in all these movies, he hated it because he did not want to be known with his father's name. He despised his father that much. So
wow.
That might explain why Lon Chaney Jr. developed a terrible drinking habit, became a chronic alcoholic, and that's why we see such a weepy, run-down version of him in Spider Baby that we already covered in the previous season, if you want to go back and cut and talk and listen to that episode. So,
didn't you cover Spider Baby? I do not recall ever watching that.
I did cover it. Okay. I might have mentioned it during one of the Attack of the Bees.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it. I just didn't. Yeah. Lon Chaney, for a reference, because I know everybody's dying to know. He's 6 foot two, because I was dying to know, and I looked that shit up. He looks tall as fuck.
That's because most people were short back then. I'm exactly the height of Lon Chaney Jr., so there you go.
That is so fucking tall. I went to go hang out with a friend last night. I was wearing 3-inch heels. I will send you the photo. He is so much massively taller than I am. It is ridiculous. It is actually, you know what it is? It's fucking disrespectful and unnecessary.
Funny thing is, we changed some staffing around at my job recently, and somebody came in the train, and between the trainer and the person that we're getting in, you know, both men, obviously, I didn't feel tall because they were the same height as me or just a smidge taller. So it's kind of weird.
I can't imagine someone your height not feeling tall.
When you see a bunch of us, you know, together, we don't feel as tall. It's around you normies that we you know.
I don't even think I'm normal. I think I'm below average in everything in life.
Lon Chaney Jr. is, or, you know, Creighton, if you want to respect his actual name, did play Larry Talbot, a.k.a. the Wolfman, who is just a blue-collar American son of a British noble, which is strange. This is the one part of the movie, and they bring it up a little bit, although he's an actor in the new one, so it makes more sense.
Yeah.
The one with, what's his name? Benicio del Toro.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I don't understand how, I mean, I know they had to for the purpose of the movie. I don't know why Lon Chaney Jr. has such a just straight up American accent when he clearly was raised in Europe and then went to America to work. He wouldn't have lost his British accent that completely. It's like, I mean, and it's hilarious when you see him standing next to who his father is supposed to be in the movie, which is Claude Rains. Which I'll bring up in a second, because there's no way that if your father's that short, you're going to grow to the height that he is, unless somebody else might have been the daddy. I'm just saying.
Somebody's got some splaining to do.
Yeah. Anyways, you're supposed to ignore that for the purposes of the movie. Yeah, I think that's more unbelievable, actually, than him turning into a werewolf, but that's just me. Lon Chaney Jr. did play, though, the most consecutive by the same actor Universal Monster of all of them, because he played in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, and then which he was the Wolfman in all of those, and there was actually an arc to the Wolfman. He eventually became cured by the end of House of Dracula, and then he played the Mummy, actually, in The Mummy's Curse.
Jesus!
He was in Spider Baby, as previously mentioned, and a movie near and dear to my heart called Hillbillies and a Haunted House.
Gee, I wonder why you would be interested in that.
Yeah.
God, he was in a lot.
He was in a lot of Westerns. I mean, I left out all the Western stuff he was in. He was in all kinds of Westerns back in the day.
What's with all these house movies? Well, I mean, I guess there's only one, but it's like House of Frankenstein.
No, there's two of them. There's House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula. It's just like Universal was like, I don't know. Let's throw all the monsters together and have them fight each other. And that's what they did.
Why not? Okay.
And they did it back in the day, but now they can't make a Dark Universe movie to save their lives. So go figure. Mm-hmm. Claude Rains, a.k.a. Sir John Talbot, plays the British aristocrat and father to Larry. He was the Invisible Man in that movie, which is actually, to me, one of the better Universal monster movies that came out, too, just because, I mean, he's probably the most evil of all the monsters, well, outside of Dracula. I mean, because he just straight up wants to murder people. He's a little rapey, and he wants to steal shit. I mean, there's nothing good about the guy.
Oh, my God. Can we imagine Donnie G as Invisible Man?
No, we don't want to imagine that at all.
Donnie G, that is a slight towards you.
Phantom of the Opera from 1943, and I do have to make that distinction because there was a prior Universal movie that was in the silent era, but this is the talkie version. He was in Casablanca, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the original Scrooge, or one of the originals from back in 1935. So Claude Rains was a pretty big actor back in the day.
Yeah.
Evelyn Anchors plays Gwen Conliff, who's the pretty shop owner in the town, and she's the romantic foil for Larry, the one that he's a little voyeuristic looking at her when she's not aware of it.
Very inappropriate. Like, he knew some shit. I thought she was, what's that actress name from Wizard of Oz?
Are you talking about the one that played Glinda the Good Witch?
No, Dorothy. Hold on.
That she did not look like Dorothy to me whatsoever.
There was
she
a few. More like, oh, go ahead.
She just looks like, I mean, she, I don't know. There was a lot of scenes where she's too pretty. She looks like Glinda the Good Witch more than anything.
Well, but. Yeah. Judy Garland is who I'm talking about.
Judy Garland, yeah.
There was just a few moments. Well, she looked like a grown-up version, obviously, because Judy did kind of get prettier as she got older. She just wasn't in a lot of things. And she just had a few moments of, I don't know, certain... I don't know, profiles where I was like, is that her? And then, of course, I looked and it's not. So
I do have to bring up, though, I mean, not only does he see her while looking, spying through a, you know, very high dollar, you know, spy or, you know, what, stargazing glass.
Yeah.
She's also engaged, and he doesn't give two fucks in this movie that she's engaged. He keeps still hitting on her, and he will not say, he will not accept no from her at any point. He's actually, there's several times this movie I have to give Lon Chaney Jr. credit. That man, if you want to use the new term that the kids are using, he had riz because some of the smoothness with how he delivered some of the shit in this movie was pretty impressive.
Yes, and it's funny because he's, okay, aside from height, he only had a few also certain profiles, angles that he looked okay, but for the most part, he wasn't a good-looking guy. But he definitely had riz.
Yeah, it was just the confidence he would say stuff and the things he would say to her because, like, there was a lot of innuendo being dropped constantly.
Yeah, it was hilarious. It was very inappropriate, though, especially for having, one, the first time meeting her, two, explaining things that are on her dresser. Like, you know he was looking at her at other times. And that fucking, you could see the moon with those. He definitely saw her moon. He probably saw her butthole.
Would you say that he was hungry like the wolf?
Shut the fuck up. I'm ending this podcast.
Evelyn was in a movie called, she was actually in a lot of horror movies back in the day too. She was in Hold That Ghost, The Ghost of Frankenstein, another Universal film, Son of Dracula, The Mad Ghoul, The Invisible Man's Revenge, and The Frozen Ghost. So
okay,
she was in a lot of movies back in the day. And then, of course, we have Bela Lugosi playing Bella, the gypsy fortune teller, and the original werewolf in the movie. Of course, he's Dracula. We've already covered a movie he was in previously, too, White Zombie. Island of Lost Souls, which was Island of Dr. Moreau type movie back in the day. The Black Cat, Son of Frankenstein, The Ghost of Frankenstein, which he actually played Frankenstein in most of these movies, which was really weird because they couldn't get Boris. Well, they did get Boris Karloff back, but he said he didn't want to play the monster anymore. He wanted to play a scientist, so go figure. Frankenstein meets Wolfman, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, where he did go back to being Dracula again, which is what he was best at. And then Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is, he was, okay, so I think, every single actor, except for Claude Rains, who died like way before all this stuff happened, all these classic monster actors had bad ends to their lives. Bela Lugosi ended up destitute and I want to say, I can't remember which drug it was. I think it's something injected, like heroin or something. But he was on drugs and didn't have any money. Lon Chaney Jr. was basically broke and an alcoholic. Boris Karloff ended up, I think, mostly broke. I'm not aware that he was on any drugs, but he was just mostly broke when he was all said and done. So none of them really ended up with anything after all of this.
Damn.
Now, Bella's situation, as we previously mentioned on White Zombie, was the fact that he was just a bad businessman. Every time that he would pick a movie that was actually, that would end up being a big success, he thought the movie was going to be shit, so he accepted, like, you know, he's like, I'll just take a little bit of money, or I'll take a bunch of money up front because I don't think you'll make anything on it, as opposed to getting a cut of the profits. And if he took the cut of the profits, he'd been wealthy for life, but he didn't. He had no... And then whenever, and then just later on, he was just like, I'll just work for drug money, which is literally what he did in Plan 9 from Outer Space when Ed Wood was friends with him. So,
yeah.
And then Maria Osinskaya, I don't know how you say her last name really, plays Maleva, who's an old gypsy woman and lorekeeper. She reappears again in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and she's in a few other movies. She is not a pleasant woman to look at, but that fits for, you know, what they were casting her as, so good on her, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, if she's in the other movies, like, I bet you she's like this typical character.
Yeah, they always made her either like the old crone or the old gypsy is what they always had her. Synopsis: after years spent abroad in America, Lawrence Talbot returns to his ancestral home after death of his older brother. While reconnecting with his father, he sees a pretty shopkeeper in town and attempts to woo her. Unfortunately, their first date at a local gypsy camp goes tragically wrong. His crush's friend is murdered by a werewolf, and he is bitten before he can put the beast down. Local authorities swear that he has killed the gypsy fortune teller, Bella, and the wounds Talbot sustained are gone by the next morning. When the full moon rises again, he transforms into a half-man, half-wolf, and begins killing locals. Is there a cure for Larry's curse of lycanthropy? Who will die next if he isn't stopped? And this is one of the taglines, so bear with me here.
Lord.
In many a distant village, there exists the legend of the werewolf or wolfman, a legend of strange mortal man with the hair and fangs of an unearthly beast, his hideous howl, a dirge of death. That whole thing was a tagline back in the day.
Why? I mean, how? I don't know. I got nothing.
Other taglines: man turned beast, his unearthly body a twitching tomb of strange desires.
Jesus, no, that is so fucking perverted.
A super shocker to make your hearts pound and your nerves jumpy.
I mean, back in the 40s, I think that would have worked a lot better.
Can you take it, his hideous howl of death? I'm glad they finished that out.
Yes, thank you.
A living horror, an unearthly body becomes a twitching tomb of strange desires. Again, just a twist on that one.
Jesus.
The new master character creator, Lon Chaney, as the Wolfman, which is funny because they didn't put the junior on there. So yeah. Is he a man or unholy beast?
Okay, that's better.
For thrills and chills, see, and then, you know, Wolfman. Of course, underneath it, the Wolfman.
Okay, I like that one.
Terror on a rampage, death on the loose.
Okay, I still like that one better than what we have.
The most spectacular horror show of all time, packed with thrills and chills.
Don't set yourself up for that kind of failure.
All right, quotes from the movie. From Sir John Talbot: yes, that's the sign of the werewolf. And then Larry responds, that's just a legend though, isn't it? And then John Talbot says, yes, but like most legends, it must have some basis in fact, and it's probably an ancient explanation of the dual personality in each of us. How does it go? Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright. I put that in there because they say this quote from three different characters, yes, at least three times in the movie.
Yes, a lot of repeats in this movie.
Frank Andrews to Gwen about Larry: there's something very tragic about that man, and I'm sure that nothing but harm will come to you through him. Well, I mean, I threw this in here because, A, that guy's a lot better man than me. If this guy, this big smooth-talking American, was like hitting on my woman, I wouldn't be as nice as this dude, first of all.
Yeah, exactly.
Secondly, the fact that he cares about the guy enough to be concerned about him, that's a hell of a thing, too. And then the part where he says, I'm sure nothing but harm will come to you, that's kind of prescient given, you know, what happens in the movie. Larry Talbot: you wouldn't want to run away with a murderer, would you? And this is one of his Riz moments. Gwen: oh, Larry, you're not. You know you're not. And then Larry's like, I killed Bella. I killed Richardson. If I stay here any longer, you can't tell who will be next. And that doesn't sound like Riz, but you know how women are. Like, you know,
I can change him.
Well, A, I could change, and B, it's like, is he really a dangerous guy? And, you know, and if he is a dangerous guy, you know, that's women boner right there. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean,
I don't know what the fuck is wrong with us. I don't know what is in our DNA that we're like, but he likes me. Fuck them hoes.
Maliva, whoever's bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself. And then Larry responds back, "Ah, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time." And then she says, "The wolf bit you, didn't he?" And Larry said, yeah, he did. And of course, you know, he has the symbol on his hand, which is the pentagram, which is actually it's the Star of David. I mean, it's kind of in where what it is. And the reason that's in the movie, and I'm sure this in trivia, and they'll bring it back up again, was the writer, again, Jewish descent, all the stuff happening with the Holocaust, he saw that they were being branded, you know, as they were, you know, being sent to the concentration camps, and that was a sign, you know, of, you know, and that was a sign of victimhood. He turned it around in this movie. If you had the Star of David in a pentagram formation, basically that was a sign of you being the, you know, not the victim, but actually the predator in this movie. He just kind of flipped it around.
Yes. Okay. I was like pentagram because pentacle is a protection and pentagram is the no star.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm very, very, very superstitious against, very much so much that Daphne was dying in Salem when I wouldn't go near a pentagram.
Would you say that, since you're very superstitious, the writing's on the wall?
You know, the dad jokes today between you and my other bestie are just, they're coming in hot is what they are.
All right. Visually. Now we do have to allot for the fact that this movie is old, so we can't hold it against modern standards and then, you know, and then say, oh, but I would say even if you hold it against modern standards, if you watch this movie in 4K, they got some pretty fucking good effects in this movie. I mean, they don't now they improved the visuals on the transformation in the next movie in the series, which I want to say was House of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Or no, actually, no, it was Frankenstein meets Wolfman because they actually show his face changing. They kind of had like a technical cheat. They had him walking between pillars.
Yes.
And every time he walked behind a pillar, it would have more hair on his face. But regardless, they just had his feet change in this movie.
I thought they had a scene where there was a little bit of an overlay.
Well, when he goes back to being Larry, yes, then they also remove it that way. So they got a little bit of that.
The feet was funny.
Yeah, but the actual look of the Wolfman is pretty fucking iconic.
Yeah.
And I got to give him credit. I mean, it looks pretty fucking good. And also, yeah, the scenes, I love the scenes in this movie where they're in the forest.
Yes.
Because the mist on the ground, the dark trees, mm-hmm, like, this is quintessential Universal. Well, that's what you think of a Universal monster movie.
Yes, one. Two, it looked so good. Like, it was very selling to me, especially for the time frame. But, like, the amount of women that just walk alone in the woods at night when it's dark, foggy, and you can't see shit. And they hear howling in the distance.
Yes. I would say the only thing in this movie that doesn't look as good, and this plays into the story a little bit, is the fact that Bella is just a straight up dog. He's not a wolf man. He's a dog whenever he attacks.
A black
wolf, you know. There's some theories on that. The main one being, you know, obviously the fact they didn't have enough money to also put, you know, Bella Lugosi in the makeup, and they wanted it to be more of a reveal whenever Chaney, you know, turned into the wolf. So that's why, or the wolf man. So that's why they had Bella as just a wolf. But the fan theories is that Bella had been a werewolf so long that he became like a full on wolf with his transformation.
Yeah.
Larry still had enough humanity left in him that he became a wolf man, that over time he would lose his humanity to a certain extent when he changed and would become just a wolf eventually.
Yeah.
That's a fan theory, at least.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so, but that's the only part of the, and it doesn't look bad. I mean, it looks like a wolf that's attacking him. I'm just saying it looks kind of odd considering the fact of what he turns into.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the movie, I mean, like, The sets all look great, like they all do on the Universal movie monster movies. Like the backdrops, like the matte paintings they have of like the you know full moon. It all looks. I mean, it's one of the best visually done of the Universal monster movies. It just is. I mean, if you want to throw the Gillman out there because it was the last one that actually came out, then sure, the Gillman looks better as far as a suit, but the Wolfman for its time, considering it came right after Dracula, which is basically Bela Lugosi, you know, in some white makeup. And then, I mean, we'll give credit to Boris Karloff. He looked pretty fucking good as Frankenstein, and it's my personal favorite monster. But anyways.
But you're not biased.
But the Wolfman still looks better as far as, like, the actual visual presentation that they put on him.
Yeah.
Story. I mean, it seems simple, you know, got a gypsy camp, you've got fortune telling, you've got like, you know, all this stuff, but you say that and that's not giving credit to the fact that this movie established werewolf films. So yes,
100%,
the silver, the wolf's head cane, which is cool as fuck, by the way. And I wished I had one of those. The way that they, just the way that the characters interact in the movie, like they really do make you like kind of, I mean, they make you buy into the fact that even though Gwen's like, she's, you know, technically taken, she's got something for Larry. Like they're even before the wolf attack, and you can't blame it on the werewolf's magnetism, which is something that will be brought up when we cover Jack Nicholson's The Wolf.
Yeah.
She really does dig Larry, and like there is Kent. And it's funny too, because the two people hated each other in real life. Like we'll get into that in trivia, but that actress could not stand Lon Chaney Jr. And there's a reason for that, because he was a total ass to her, but you buy it in the movie that they like each other. So that's some good acting. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
But as far as the story, I just like the fact that they wrapped all that stuff in there. They've got the old gypsy curse. They've got the, you know, well, it's not really gypsy curse, but the whole gypsy aspect to it.
Yeah, she has more, I don't know, I feel like watching it felt like she had more of a resolution or potential, not cure, but help.
Yeah, and she also, through trying to help Larry, that you see, I mean, we'll give credit to that too in the story, it gives her almost a resolution for losing Bella too, because she never really had the chance to say goodbye to him. And so in her final like scene with Larry before she, you know, she tells him, you know, she has like one scene with him before he changes, saying that, you know, she hopes that he finds the peace that, you know, that he needs or whatever. By saying that, she ends up actually having a resolution.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's got a pretty good story to it. Like, I mean, there's nothing that really drags on. It's not like The Mummy. Like I like the look of The Mummy in the original Universal Monster movie, but it's kind of dull. Like the whole entire movie is.
Yeah.
To me, and Frankenstein's basically like a riff on the novel, especially Bride of Frankenstein. Not take away from it. It's my favorite of the movies, but still, it's a riff on the novel, and then of course Dracula is too. For what this is and how well it establishes the character, I feel like it's pretty fun. I mean, the story is really good in this.
Yeah.
I don't really have any problem with the acting in the movie either. Like, there's nobody in the movie that really stands out to me as, like, a poor acting. I mean, especially given the fact that I've seen some other stuff since then that are, like, more modern and like, the actors are, like, so flat that they're unbelievable. Like, They might ham it up a little bit in some scenes, but that's kind of the Universal Monster movie charm. Like, they do that in the movies, you know?
Yeah, but the thing about it is, though, is, excuse me, it was that, well, you're calling it charm. I'm like, it's that typical 1940s cheesy acting, you know? Like, it's overacting.
Yeah, but you got to remember, too, at the time, like, how they even delivered, like, the news that way. You know, it was like, I mean, they had, they called it the transatlantic accent. They had a whole other accent that they used when they were, and it was, like, way out there. And it was, like, over in France today, you know, like, I can't even imitate it. It was, like, just so over the top that it was, you know, but that's how most of this stuff was, because they just got through silent films. And their response to that was not to have subtlety. It was to go like, you know, well, we can talk now, so let's really put it out there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I can get it from like a modern perspective. You go back and watch it and you're like, why are these people like so like just out there with everything? But if you got some kind of sense of like the history of it, I don't know, to me, it's charming just to go back and watch it. Cause it's like those old dramatic plays that they used to, and that's part of where it came from too, is a lot of this came from theater, because in the theater you have to play up to get your voice and all your actions out to like the people in the back of the room. So, I mean, and they don't need that. They don't need that in film. But they didn't realize that until much later on, and when they could pull it back and make it more natural, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it took time, and this is still fairly early. God, for the previous movies, I mean, it was literally just words on a screen. You didn't actually hear the people talk, so.
And they really had, I mean, like, if you look at the actions on the screen to make it more apparent to people, I mean, it was way out there. Like, if they needed somebody's attention, they were waving their hands like they were spastic and, you know, having a seizure, you know. But, like, so they backed it back from that, at least. I mean, we can give them credit for that.
Okay, fine.
I'm throwing out the devil's advocate side of it. I get where you're coming from. So yeah,
it's just hard for me.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. So I mean, I'm just trying to say that's why I look at it that way. It's a good time capsule, I think, you know, for what they did.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the music. I mean, the soundtrack in this, especially whenever the wolf is, or the wolf man is out, you know, hunting, I mean, it's pretty iconic. For the movies.
I feel like this is what I hear a lot. And I know there's probably several movie soundtracks that are playing when I'm walking around Universal Studios, which I miss so bad. I'm having Universal withdrawals. You know those stupid, dumb Disney fucking adults? Like, am I a Universal adult? But I think it's appropriate to be a Universal adult.
Oh, just, if you look back at all the Universal movies, how can you not be? I mean, you got Jaws, which we'll be covering this season. You got Back to the Future. You got, I mean, E.T. It just goes on. Jurassic Park. If you don't like a Universal movie, I mean, and really like, I mean, since they came out with some of the best, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, it's just being in the park, like, especially, you know, like Harry Potter world, or even at the little kids areas, like the Minion stuff. It's fun. Like, I don't know. I just, I'm having withdrawals and I'm like, oh no, am I one of those?
No, I think you're fine for that. I mean, and I don't know if you want to go back in at any point. I mean, I can play part of the theme here just like for a little bit, because I know we'll probably get flagged by Universal if we play it, but I mean, I could just play it off my phone here if you want me to throw it in.
It's totally up to you. But yeah, I feel like when you're walking around, you definitely hear like music from Dracula or music from, you know, Wolfman. Definitely. I know for a fact I've heard some of the music. Maybe put it closer to the mic. It's a little choppy. No, it's not playing at all. There it goes. That's so weird. It just kind of goes away. I think your mic is canceling the noise.
It probably is.
That's actually a pretty good microphone that I sent you.
Yeah. Oh, that is pretty good.
Yeah. So good. It's anyway, like, nope, I don't want to get you thrown out.
Anyways, it's definitely that over the top, like orchestral music that, you know, you always associate with, you know, like some of those old Universal monster movies. But like, I mean, it was more so in this movie than it was in the previous ones.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to, I know we probably want to hold like your opinion on this for until the review, until the actual, like, we give our rating. So do you want me to just go in the trivia? Cause there is a lot for this movie.
Yeah, but just real quick before we jump on that, I don't really feel like I elaborated that much on the visuals. Because yes, we did just see his feet in like the first transformation. And yes, we talked about how iconic this version of the Wolfman is that I feel like we've seen in like Teen Wolf and quite possibly Thriller, Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Funny you say that. You know who worked on Thriller?
Who?
Rick Baker, who did the visual effects for American Werewolf in London.
Oh my God. Which, whoo, I got to
John Landis directed it, who also directed American Werewolf in London. So imagine that.
That's fucking wild. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw out my kind of like excitement for how good that was, especially for the time. Like, it was very sellable.
Yeah. I mean, it's. You know, that transformation scene, and I mean, I'm glad you brought it up. It inspired, I mean, and I've got it in here, but it, I mean, I mentioned it, you know, in the lead up to this, but that transformation scene, like, just lit the imagination up of, like, all the effects people that we have covered in this, you know, like, I mean, just for instance, Tom Savini, he quotes this movie as being what got him in this specific one that got him into wanting to do like visual effects. Because when he saw Lon Chaney Jr. change, he's like, I want to do that. I want to make that kind of stuff. Same thing for Rick Baker, who went on to make American Werewolf in London. Rob Bottin, who studied under Rick Baker, who made the Howlings visual effects. You know, funny that all these werewolf movie guys, you know, were inspired by this movie. But it just goes on and on and on. Like, they all go back to this specific movie and say that it's the effects work in this that, like, if this is what they can do in movies, like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
So, trivia. In Kurt Cytomack's original script, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name, but that, whatever, for the film, whether or not Lawrence Talbot really underwent a physical transformation to a werewolf or if the transformation simply occurred in his mind was left ambiguous. The Wolfman was never to appear on screen, but ultimately the studio decided or determined that Talbot's literal transformation into a werewolf would be more appealing to the audience and thus more profitable. The script was revised accordingly. The remake of the film, starring Benicio del Toro, leaned into this idea, having its version of Lawrence Talbot be admitted to an asylum for delusions of lycanthropy.
What?
So that's why. Yeah, there's a scene toward the end of the movie where, I mean, he's turning, don't get me wrong, but like there's a scene toward the end of the movie where they commit him to an asylum because they think that it's all in his head, that he's killing people and thinking that he's a werewolf.
I mean, if you put him in there, it's kind of safe for everyone else, just, you know. And then they get to fuck around and find out.
To quote one of the best lines from anything, which is the Watchman and Rorschach's character in particular, which I will fight anybody tooth and nail that character is one of the best written in that entire series. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Yep.
So
I love it.
Bela Lugosi actively campaigned for the lead role in this movie, but ended up willing to play the minor supporting role.
Okay.
It makes sense. I mean, he was the bigger star, so I can imagine him wanting to be the Wolfman.
Yeah, did he have to have everything, though?
I mean, he got to play Frankenstein, too, so he pretty much had all of them but that one. The wolf that Larry Talbot fought was actually Lon Chaney Jr.'s own German Shepherd. Funny story about that. It wasn't his German Shepherd when they first started fighting, but he grew to love that dog so much that it became his pet, and he always brought that dog with him to every set that he went to after that.
Yeah.
I actually have something I can send you about that too. Cody of all people sent me, when he heard we was doing this movie or whatever, he sent me like this meme or whatever, where they were talking about that specific thing about that dog. So,
oh my God.
The Wolfman battled a bear in one scene, but unfortunately the bear ran away during filming. What few scenes were filmed were put into a theatrical trailer instead. And that bear actually gave Evelyn Anchors, the, you know, female love interest, such a bad scare, when it escaped its trailer and chased the actress up a ladder where she was pulled to safety by an electrician.
Holy fuck. Yeah, I'd be fucking terrified.
It was 600 pounds. 600? So that was a huge bear.
That's wild.
Universal originally planned the project for its horror superstar, Boris Karloff, but he turned it down because he was doing theater at the time and wanted to, you know, focus on that. So there you go. This film popularized a number of myths about werewolves, such as the only way to kill them is with a silver bullet, as well as werewolves and their victims being marked with pentagrams. Some of the mythology is taken from the earlier film Werewolf of London, such as a werewolf bite turning another person into a werewolf, and others are original concepts created by writer Kurt Sidemack. Actual werewolf folklore is extremely varied. In some, one became a werewolf by being cursed or by making a pact with the devil. They could turn at any time and were mortal and could be killed by conventional means. Later films added the details of werewolves being immortal again, an invention of Hollywood, and basically an excuse to keep bringing the character back for sequel after sequel after sequel.
I'm sorry. So basically, there was a werewolf in London in 1935. I know you mentioned that it was technically the first film, but I, for some reason, was thinking you were talking about American Werewolf in London.
No, Werewolf of London from 1935 was the very first one. The character, all of the people that are like big fans of this movie acknowledge that they like the look of the werewolf in the movie, which is basically what we kind of think of today. Not Lon Chaney's version, you know, kind of with that poofy, like, you know, hair in front. But, you know, like that one version of a werewolf that's got, like, the widow's peak, that's got, like, the tuft of hair, like, sticking over top, and then, like, the dog nose and all that. That's what he looked like in Werewolf of London.
Yeah.
When it says that they made basically the character immortal, they really did that with Lawrence Talbot. So in the next movie, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, or, you know, or whatever it was called, there's a bunch of grave robbers that go to dig up Larry Talbot's grave, and when they do, it turns out that even though he was technically killed at the end of this movie, them digging him back up basically reanimates him, and because the curse is not gone, and he you know, rips them apart and then escapes. So he just keeps coming back and back and back after this.
Yeah.
Because he's not really shot by a silver bullet in the first movie. His dad beats him with that silver cane, which technically should work, but I mean, you know. The foggy Floored Forest, where many of this film's key scenes take place, was one of the largest indoor sets Universal had ever built at the time and occupied an entire soundstage on the studio's backlot.
Whoa!
Yeah, and that means a whole lot whenever you consider, I mean, you actually know, you know, Universal's, like, you know, how they've got, you know, their backlot set up, so.
Yeah, well, obviously, we get to go back there a lot, and fuck, when you get Halloween Horror Nights, you get to fucking walk around and touch shit, which is insane, because it's dark, and, like, I mean, yeah, they have a few people there with those red cones, you know, to kind of guide you or make sure you don't do too much tomfoolery, but.
Yeah, don't remind me. Like, I was watching the behind the scenes in this movie, and they showed, like, the back lot and all the stuff they have there, and I was so fucking envious of you in that moment, because they literally, you can take tours of, like, you know, the hill valleys, like, the, you know, the town square with the clock and everything from Back to the Future. You get to see, you know, the actual psycho house up on the head. Like, all that stuff is there.
We get to see the psycho house, and they have the body that they had for the mom, the decomposed body, looking at you out the window.
It's unfair. It's all I'm going to say, because, like...
But look at how much you have compared to what we have.
I know, like, I mean, the size of the area is way better. It's just that, you know, it's like, it's that classic Universal stuff, though, that's, like, kind of cool. Like, I would at least want to see it one time.
Oh,
you know?
You absolutely have to. It's one of those things where I hate to inform you, but if we could ever drag you guys to hell, a.k.a. California, to visit, it would, for you and the wife, it would have to be Southern California, because you would have to experience Universal, Disneyland, I should say Universal and or Disneyland, or just Universal. And we would just have to meet you guys down there, because Northern California is beautiful, and it's nothing like the California you guys see on TV. But there's things to do, but it's going to be more scenic things. It's not going to be kind of like fun things. We have to go to SoCal for that.
Listen, if I come out there, we are going to Where the Birds was filmed. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I mean, that is, that's about an hour and 20 minutes from where I live.
Yeah, beautiful drive, though. We have to go there, if nothing else.
Oh, my God. Bodega Bay, you would love it. You and the wife would love it.
So getting back to this, the film, this film marks the first of five appearances by Lon Chaney Jr. as the Wolfman. Out of Universal's classic canon of monsters, Chaney is the only actor to portray the same character in each of the studio's classic films and its sequels.
Damn. So
there's that. Evelyn Ankers had difficulty working with Lon Chaney Jr. Here's that story. Already angry at Ankers because she was given his dressing room, the studio punishing him for vandalizing studio property while drunk. Even back in this time, he was already hitting the booze pretty hard. The actor constantly would irritate her, nicknaming her Shankers, which a shank is obviously a homemade knife-like weapon, you know, in prison. And he called her that because she was a backstabber, according to him. And he would play juvenile practical jokes on her. He would like to sneak up on her in full makeup and scare her all the time.
That's awesome. And they were like in, they were in other movies together. Lots of other movies together.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that's kind of shitty of him, though. I mean, to be honest, because, we don't know the details. She could have petitioned to have the bigger dressing room, you know, when she saw that, you know, the writing was on the wall for him. But at the same time, that's just him being petty because it was his mistake that got them to say, you know, get the fuck out, you know, of that room. Larry Talbot and his father, Sir John, attend church on Sunday in the village, but the doorway and steps of the village church looks more like that of a cathedral. In fact, it was a cathedral, part of the original set built for the legendary silent version of The Hunchback of Notre Dame from 1923, which starred Lon Chaney Sr., which stood on the Universal backlot for over 20 years.
Yeah.
Even a man who is pure of heart and says blah, blah, blah. This quote has been listed in some sources as an authentic gypsy or Eastern European folk saying, but writer Kurt Sidemack admits that he just made it up. Nonetheless, the rhyme would be recited in every future Universal film appearance of the Wolfman and would also be quoted in Van Helsing from 2004, albeit slightly modified. The moon is full and bright rather than the autumn moon is bright.
Okay.
Kurt Sidemack claims that he is responsible for the addition of the canon of the werewolf's vulnerability to silver, and this claim has often been repeated by horror aficionados, including director John Landis. Silver, according to legend, was first used to slay a werewolf in The Beast of Gavadan, dating back to the late 19th century. Novels recounting the legend appeared in the 30s and featured the slaying of a werewolf with a silver bullet. This film was the first to utilize the silver bullet myth on screen. Pretty cool that they, you know, got that into it. Jack Pierce and this man, all of these horror movie people, I mean, to say they creamed their jeans would be an understatement when they're talking about Jack Pierce. Like, I mean, give the man credit. Jack Pierce had the best visuals back in the day of any of like the makeup effects artists. So I get the reverence they have for him. But there is a whole special dedicated to nothing but Jack Pierce when you listen to the behind the scenes on this stuff. But he achieved the Wolfman's iconic makeup primarily with a rubber nose and yak hair, which was singed with a curling iron and then attached to Lon Chaney Jr.'s face, arm, and legs with spirit gum. Chaney's makeup took 6 hours to apply and 3 hours to get off. And then while Chaney Jr. didn't exactly enjoy the makeup process and once complained, what gets me is after work when I'm hot and itchy and tired and after I've got to sit in that chair for 45 minutes while Pierce just about kills me ripping off the stuff he put on me in the morning. I would say that one person, and this is lost to the spirits above or below, however you want to look at it, in the form of Tim Curry, had it slightly worse than you, sir. But, yes. You know, okay.
Yeah, cry as a river.
Shooting lasted from October 27th to November 25th, 1941, with a December 12th release. Yes, I said that. They filmed in October to November and then turned around immediately after and released it early December. That is crazy to think about with the way that they make movies now because some of these movies are not like they were filmed 4 years ago and just now coming out.
But see, I'm not saying editing.
They didn't do all the post-production, though. Yeah. They don't have that, so that's part of it.
That's what I'm thinking. And so, like, there probably wasn't a ton of editing that went into it.
Yeah, they didn't have to cut it up. It's also kind of cool, though, that they started filming it around Halloween. I think that's pretty badass, to be honest. But Let's see. There's some disputes on that, though. Filming production. Some people say it started in September and then ran to November, but you know that it still came out like 2 weeks after they finished shooting it. Larry Silver, wolf-headed Kane, the only known surviving prop for the movie, currently resides in the personal collection of a genre film archivist, Bob Burns. Burns, who was a schoolboy at the time, was given the Kane head by the man who made it for the film, prop maker Ellis Berman. It has since been sold to a Maryland collector.
Wow.
I wish to God I had that. That is like there's very few things that I would want as far as a prop from a movie, but I think that'd be pretty fucking cool to have.
Yeah, it was a pretty good looking cane. And as she said, it's a high value item.
It is a high value item. I don't know. I'd be willing to buy anything she was willing to sell. Just saying.
You
she was a looker.
Hussy.
According to the documentary on the recent Wolfman DVD collection, the script for the Wolfman was influenced by writer Kurt Seidemack's experiences in Nazi Germany. Seidemack had been living a normal life in Germany, only to have it thrown into chaos and himself on the run when the Nazis took control, just as Larry Talbot finds his normal life thrown into chaos and himself on the run once he is turned into a werewolf. Also, the Wolfman can be seen as a metaphor for the Nazis, an otherwise good man who is transformed into a vicious killing animal who knows who his next victim will be when he sees the symbol of a pentagram, i.e. a star on them. That's a pretty good point. Basically, anytime he sees that star on somebody, that's who he's going to kill next.
Yes.
A.K.A. the Nazis, when they would see the Star of David, unfortunately, that's who they were going to go after.
Yeah.
Also, that might be the possible reason, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, that in American Werewolf in London, there's these monsters that are in a dream sequence that come busting in to kill David's family, who all look like Nazis. That might be the link between these movies. Just saying. In the first version of the script, Larry was not the prodigal son of Sir John Talbot, nor related to him in any way. He was just an American engineer who came to fix his telescope and ends up getting trapped in the werewolf curse. That actually makes more sense to me. Probably should have went with that. I'm just saying.
Maybe.
It's stated that a werewolf is a human being who becomes a wolf at certain times of the year when the wolf bane blooms and the autumn moon is bright, but the moon is never depicted in the film.
Yeah.
This is the only one of the Universal series of Wolfman films in which the full moon is never shown. In the sequel, the folklore is changed to when the moon is full and bright. So I messed up earlier because I was seeing like all the behind the scenes stuff where they're talking about all the sequels. So that's probably where I was thinking that matte painting of the full moon, but it's actually not in this movie. So there you go. Bella's werewolf form appears as a quadrupedal, bestial appearing wolf. But Larry's appears as a bipedal wolf man. A possible reason for this is the film originally was meant to be a psychological thriller, and no one was supposed to be quite sure if Larry was becoming a werewolf or whether it was all in his head. Naturally, this means he would have to be attacked by a creature resembling a true wolf, or if he was attacked by a wolfman type monster, there'd be no doubt that the werewolves were real. Also in canon, the novel Return of the Wolfman and its sequel stated that lycanthropy affects people in different ways. This is the other fan theory. By that, Bella looking like a big wolf, like in the Middle Ages once, and Larry was a hairy humanoid wolf features. The novel's established Werewolf of London is canon, and Wilfred Glendon's werewolf form was also different. In the sequels of the novel, Maria Zaliski's Dracula's daughter herself confirms that they are different werewolf types. So, in their novels, at least, they established that every werewolf looks different. So there you go.
That's kind of cool. Because if you think about it, it kind of opens it up for lore for the other werewolf movies.
It opens you up for that. It also opens up the potential, even though it's supposed to be terrible, the newest Wolfman remake, which just came out. He doesn't even look like a wolf in it. He looks like a mutated crackhead because it's like the lycanthropy just like, you know, it morphs his body, but it doesn't, he gets like hair in different spots, but it's not the same. So it kind of opens that up too, the reason why he looks that way, if you want to think of it that way.
Yeah.
Maria Auspenskaya, who played the old gypsy woman, was only 6 years older than Bela Lugosi, who played her son. That makes me feel real bad for that woman because she looked real old.
Yeah.
And Bella, they had like the gray makeup on and stuff, but he didn't look that bad.
No.
He didn't look like she did. The first Universal picture since The Black Cat to introduce the major characters during the opening credits and the actors playing them with brief clips from the movie. This premiered 2 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor. That's crazy to think about. This came out 2 days after Pearl Harbor. Universal, lacking a theater chain, had planned to market the film as part of a double bill with The Mad Doctor of Market Street, which was made in 1942, but feared that the public would avoid an all-horror bill after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Despite Universal's apprehensions over the public's appetite for horror movies, though, following that attack, the film did become one of the studio's top grossers in the year of 1942. We've had this so many times, though, where, like, these horror movies, like, they change stuff because of, like, recent events, and they don't think that the audience can deal with it, and they're always wrong, or they fuck over the movie because of it. Like, I still think that their original plan for Scream 3, which would have had Stu grooming these other, like, you know, young killers to do, like, the job or whatever from prison, like, that he wanted to go after Sydney from prison, was a lot better idea than what we actually got in Scream 3, but also, like, the fact that Columbine happened and it, like, freaked them out and they took that away, like, that's so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
It just is. Anyways, the silver top of Larry's wolfhead cane was made of vulcanized rubber, so none of the actors or stunt doubles would get injured if they were accidentally hit by it. Now, that's fine, but I still argue that vulcanized rubber, if you know what that is, I mean, that's still kind of, yeah, I mean, it's like tires. Getting hit with a tire is not exactly the best thing either. No. Just saying.
Not even a small chunk. It blows.
Yeah. Lon Chaney Jr.'s character is never referred to as the Wolfman in the movie. So there's that. Kurt Sidemack's first draft lacked all werewolf scenes and the hallucinatory sequence that went along with it. This film doesn't contain a single shot of the full moon, as we've said.
Yes.
Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi later would appear together in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Lugosi would play the titular character.
Titular.
And Chaney would reprise his role. This has been reported that during the scenes where Larry Talbot changed into a werewolf, it took approximately 21 hours to achieve the on-screen transformation.
Wow.
Some of the scenes of the village look like the same village in Frankenstein from 1931. Just imagine that. Frankenstein came out in 1931.
Oh, shit.
Particularly when the gypsy woman is coming to town in a horse and buggy and passes under an archway. The painting of John Talbot, Larry's older brother, is actually Lon Chaney Jr. with some facial lines and gray hair to make him look older, but still resemble Larry. Kind of cool. Larry makes 3 transformations to a werewolf and wears the same clothing each time, regardless of how he's dressed prior to the change. It's kind of funny. I mean, like, no matter what he's wearing, he's got the same, knee pants and the, you know, white shirt or whatever that's open up at his chest or, you know, however he looks. The setting for the film was deliberately left undefined because Universal wanted moviegoers to think it could be happening at the time they were watching the film. So there's that, you know, and when I say that, there's like a modern car in the movie that Lon Chaney Jr. is driving in it whenever he first pulls up. It's kind of in a, you know, nondescript or European town or from somewhere. They just basically leave everything open and don't really give it a time frame so that people are like, is that happening right now? You know, not that, I mean, like, we look back at it and think that's kind of goofy, but yeah. I mean, it makes sense because you don't want to, like, date your movie, you know, when it comes out.
What if the movie is really nice and has a great personality? Why wouldn't you want to date it?
But if you really loved it, you would have put a ring on it.
Exactly.
It has been noted that 6'2", as you have stated earlier, Lon Chaney Jr. is considerably taller than his father. But it's actually funny because that's the real difference between Lon Chaney Jr. and his real life father. Lon Chaney was only the senior was only 5'6" to 5'7", which was the exact same height as Claude Rains, and Junior towered over him at 6'2" to 6'3". That's so insane.
That, like, height is so unnecessary already. I'm just letting you know.
The poem about the werewolf and the statement about walking a thorny path are both recited 3 times. And yes, by the time that we hear it the third, we're like, okay, we get the point.
Yeah.
They even say that in the behind the scenes. There's several people that's like, they like to beat you over the head with this, just like the wolf-headed cane.
Yeah.
The werewolf that Larry kills appears as a normal wolf. The filmmakers intended that he would also be a regular looking wolf, but changed him into a wolf beast to make him look scarier. Universal hadn't, which I'm glad they did, because a regular looking wolf would have been stupid. This would have not caught on if he'd been that way. It's that wolf, half man that caught everybody's attention. Universal had another unproduced werewolf script planned as a vehicle for Boris Karloff on file, but writer Kurt Sidomack did not utilize any of it for his script. He's like, fuck that, I've got my own idea, and that's what he wrote.
Okay.
Although it isn't mentioned in this film, the sequel, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman from 43, places Larry's body in a tomb in Llanwely, a fictitious town in Wales. This is presumably where the Talbot Estate is located. The Welsh connection is repeated in the later film when Larry is found unconscious on the outskirts of Cardiff, the capital of Wales. The city appears to be within walking distance of the village. It is noticeable that none of the characters in either of the film has a Welsh accent, and no one seems to be able to pronounce Llanwely, which I'm not probably saying right. Accurately, but we're Americans and we don't care, so there you go.
America, fuck yeah.
It's like wash your sister sauce.
I know
that the British people like to get on there and say it's Worcestershire, and I will say it that way. What's that?
I thought it was Worcestershire.
No, it's Worcestershire. That is how they say it. Worcestershire.
Well, they don't say shit right anyways.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So wash your sisters just as accurate. Throwing it out there. Claude Rains portrays the father of Lon Chaney Jr., who is the son of Lon Chaney. Thus, Lon Chaney's on-screen father and real-life father both have portrayed the Phantom of the Opera. Lon Sr. was in the 1925 silent version, and Rains was in the 1943 version. It's kind of a cool link.
Yeah.
Sir John's telescope is inside when Larry is looking through it, but visible on the floor in the lower right is a covered track, which would allow the telescope to be moved outside so he could actually see real celestial things and not just a hot woman in town. When Bella begins to read Gwen's palm, she places his hand on his forehead. When he removes his hand, a brief glimpse of a pentagram can be seen on his head. That's kind of a cool little, detail, yeah. I guess. Having Larry be somewhat lecherous towards women is a joke on the common way of referring to men at the time. They were called wolves, so there you go. And they were hungry. Like
the wolf. Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
You can have it because we're both have the diabetes, and you can let it kill you.
I didn't say it wouldn't be a Diet Coke. Now I want a McDonald's Diet Coke so bad.
I would prefer just to have a Sprite Zero. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
It was coincidental that Bela Lugosi would play shape-shifting wolf, as shape-shifting was also a characteristic of Dracula, who would turn into a bad or a miss, but also a wolf or a large dog. So he could kind of do everything, because that's how Dracula is. The film coincidentally uses the same music theme as Man Made Monster from 1941, which also starred Lon Chaney Jr., and featuring composer Hans J. Salter and music director Charles Previn. The box cover of the Aurora Plastics model for the Wolfman featured Lon Chaney Jr.'s makeup, but they used Oliver Reed's costume from The Curse of the Werewolf for the body. While this film opened in 1941, Curse opened just 1 year before Aurora premiered their line of Universal Monster model kits. Also, a little bit of trivia for the next movie we're going to be covering. That's the reason that in American Werewolf in London, when they ask, and I want to say it's the nurse, when they ask if you've ever seen the Wolfman, she's like the one with Oliver Reed, because the British think more of that film than they do of the American one. The Wolfman from 1941 is one of the top three-tier Universal Studios monsters without a direct literary source. The others are the Mummy and the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
I would argue that the Wolfman's probably the best of those three. I know a lot of people love The Creature from Black Lagoon. It's a good movie, but did it really have any good sequels? I don't think so. In the 1970s, the novelizations of the original films were issued paperback originals as part of a series written by Carl Dredstone, which was a pseudonym for British horror writer Ramsey Campbell. The title character, the Wolfman, was very influential in Hollywood's werewolf legend depictions. After this Wolf's movie success, Lon Chaney Jr. would reprise his role, as we've said, in four more movies. The film is the second Universal Pictures werewolf film after Werewolf in London. Universal Pictures produced a remake of this film as The Wolfman, with Joe Johnston directing the film and Benicio Del Toro starring as Lawrence Talbot, also producer of the film. It follows the same basic plot as the original, however, the story and characters were significantly altered. Another similarly named remake just came out, The Wolfman from 2025, and by all accounts is a pretty shit movie. Funny thing about the Benicio Del Toro one that we will be covering is that he looks a lot like Lon Chaney Jr. in that movie. To me, he does, the way that he made himself look.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
That what? Say that again?
That Benicio Del Toro looks like Lon Chaney Jr.
100%. Okay. I wanted to make sure that's what I heard. I thought I heard Lon Chaney looks like somebody else. But no, I was thinking as you were talking about this, how there's similarities. Obviously, Benicio Del Toro, he has a very unique look. He doesn't look like a lot of people.
He's got that hangdog, like, you know, woe is me look down pat that Lon Chaney Jr. had. The funny thing is, though, is that the way that he carries himself in the movie, a lot of people says looks more like Oliver Reed's portrayal. So it's like Del Toro loved the Wolfman so much that he was like mimicking both of the main two actors who were known for the werewolf movies.
Yeah, hold on. I'm trying to pull up pictures. I want to see Benicio Del Toro now because
I thought you were getting ready to say naked, and I was like, okay, you are married, so
I'm married, not fucking dead.
Not dead.
Jeez.
Okay. While you're looking that up,
oh my god, he's naked. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, while you're looking that up, I'm gonna go ahead and say I would rate this movie a 4 for me. I love the Universal monster movies. The Mummy is the least one of mine. I like the other ones better, obviously. Frankenstein being my favorite, Bride being the best of all of them.
Yeah,
but I would say this is a solid 4 for me. I would give it higher than that, and I'm tempted just based upon, like, you know, how well they did to maybe, I mean, give it some lenience and go almost to a 4.5. But a 4 feels like more appropriate because, like, I like the movie a lot. It's just that I mean, if I'm just kind of like putting it in the pantheon of like all the Universal monster movies that I do enjoy, and like Bride is the top, then there's Frankenstein, so that'd be 4.5, and this would be a 4, and then it kind of goes down from there. If I'm just comparing it that way, and I know I shouldn't probably be doing that, but that's how I'm going to rate it.
Well, yeah, we say we shouldn't do certain things when rating movies a lot, and we do it. Like, oh, I'm not comparing this to this one, but I'm gonna.
Well, I mean, it, just as a werewolf movie, I would give it a 4.5. Yeah. I mean, it established the lore. It's well done. It's one of the best looking Universal monster movies, even to this day. I get why all the older generation that actually made the movies that we grew up with, you know, the makeup effects artists, I get why they were inspired by this movie in particular, because I mean, up to a certain point, it, like, Jack Pierce did do some of the best makeup effects that had ever been put out there until these guys who idolized him put their own stamp on there and actually came out with even better shit, you know, that we grew up with.
Yeah.
And then all that went away and all the artistry went out of movies, and now it's all fucking CGI and looks like shit, but that's a whole other argument.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, CGI can be used to make a movie better, but I still think if they did a combination of prosthetics and then touched it up with CGI, that'd be a better thing than doing the Marvel/Disney thing where they just put you in front of a fucking green screen and say, yeah, act like this guy with balls on his face is, like, you know, the big bad guy. And then you're sitting there and you're like, all right, I guess. I mean, it's a big difference whenever you've got, like, you know, Lon Chaney Jr. in fucking full makeup, like, you know, jumping up from behind you and then scaring the shit out of you like the poor, you know, anchors did in this movie, you know, yeah. Like, I mean, or behind the scenes. I mean, when you got something to act off of, and there's been several of the old school actors who've said this, you get more into the movie that way, like, because you've got something tangible to act off of.
Yeah.
I give it a 4.5 as far as just werewolves movies go. If I'm ranking it within the Universal pantheon, it's a 4. It's just, it kind of, you know, I can't give it, because it doesn't stand up to some of the best in the series, but I mean, werewolf movies, I mean, it's the granddaddy. It started everything, literally. Yes.
Well, I am just below you at a 3.9, only because this was one of those older films that even though it is the original and it's, I should give it its due, it felt a little slower to me. It felt just, it was very old timey. I'm not giving it like, I'm trying to point out why it wouldn't be a four, the things that kind of brought me down, but also that's for me kind of high for an older film. I know Birds got higher, but that shit's scary, you know? And this,
well, and also it's more modern. So, yes. I mean, there's stuff to that.
Exactly. So I think for me, a 3.9 is really good in terms of this film. The music is really good, though. I mean, especially the scenes where he's present. I think overall it was pretty decent makeup and whatever costume that they did for him. So, well, not terrible. I do like that you could just beat him. I mean, they did bring that silver into play with the actual, you know, head of the cane.
Yes.
I don't know. And then, overall, I really liked this movie. It's just not quite a 4 to a 5 for me.
I'll put it this way. I mean, the Universal Monster movies, I still go back, not every Halloween, obviously, because we've got so many movies we can watch for Halloween that, I mean, I could change out, even if you do the one per day for 31 days, I could change out what I'm watching every year and still probably have enough to do me for a decade without repeating them. But I honestly do try to go back every, you know, couple of years at least and watch, like, the Universal classic monsters, and I always make sure that I watch the Wolfman. Like, I mean, I'm iffy on Dracula, whether I want to throw it in there, because I like Bela Lugosi's portrayal, but at the same time, to me, Dracula gets fucking old. I'm sorry, yeah. We get to, like, vampire season, and Nosferatu, for anybody out there, the remake that just came out from Eggers, I fucking enjoy it more than all the rest of the Dracula portrayals because it goes a different route with him. Yeah. I mean, it's the same fucking story, but it's a different portrayal. He's not that suave aristocrat and all that bullshit that they add in there. But I always put Frankenstein and Bride in this movie, and I always make sure I watch them. And then I'll throw in, Creature from the Black Lagoon on occasion just because visually, it was the best of all the monsters. It's just, you know, the story on it was kind of so-so. It didn't have that classic gothic feel like all these other ones did.
Oh, my God. My friend just sent me a meme. It is so appropriate right now. It just popped up on my notifications. It says, y'all ever throw up so bad it felt like you were changing into a werewolf? I don't think he knows what we are reviewing right now. So that is fucking hilarious.
You ever seen that, speaking of that, there's a meme where it shows different types of wolves, and it's like a werewolf, you know, W-E-R-E, and it's like, you know, this one, a werewolf, meaning he's like, and he's enlightened or whatever, he's got like a third eye, and he's like, you know, one with the cosmos, and then there's one that's like, there's one that's like he turns into a building or something like that, you know, because how, like a warehouse wolf or something. It's like, there's like four different versions of them. They all play on the wear part of it.
Oh yeah. I think, didn't you send me that meme once?
I think I did a while back. I could probably find it. I remember
it took me so long to figure it out. I think I had started looking at it in the morning and I just couldn't figure it out. And then finally I took my daughter to her orthodontic appointment and somewhere over there I figured out. I was like, oh my God, it's a warehouse.
Yeah. This one's different. This one's got different. It's so it says a werewolf and it's got the, you know, half man, half wolf.
Yeah.
It's a werewolf, like meaning W-A-R-E-W-O-L-F. And it's like a wolf that's for sale. You know, he's a were.
Yes.
A werewolf is a W-E-A-R wolf, meaning you're wearing the wolf as clothing. And then a werewolf, which is, you know, he has, you know, become sentient. So there's the last one of them. So.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I give it a 4.5 for werewolf movies. I mean, since we're within this season, I do try to go back where we watch this movie, you know, pretty often because I do think it's entertaining even to this day. I mean, we're almost to the point where, I mean, this movie's like what, 20 years removed, or it's less than 20 now from being 100 years old.
Oh, Jesus.
It is. I mean, you know, and don't get me started on those people that like to point out that it's as close to the 1980s now as it was for in the 80s
that
to
is so
like
disrespectful.
The 1800s or some kind of bullshit. Like when they point that stuff out, I'm like, don't tell me I'm fucking old. My body tells me that. I don't need you to say it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie is like less than 20 years away from being 100 years old. So, I mean, and the fact that it still stands up, Universal, I mean, they were built on quality movies. I mean, even back then.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say, since I know this is not like, these old movies are not like your thing?
No, not really.
All right, well, that's anticlimactic. All right, folks, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.